So welcome back to the New Books Network, New Books in Jewish Studies. I'm Danielle Drori, and with me is Maya Barzilai, Assistant Professor of Hebrew Literature and Jewish Culture at the University of Michigan, and the author of the book Golem, Modern Wars and Their Monsters, which was published by New York University Press last year. Hi, Maya.
Hello, Danielle. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for joining the New Books Network today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm very pleased to talk about the new book.
So before we start discussing this truly captivating scholarly book, we should probably present the book's protagonist, the golem. Could you describe this creature and its genesis for our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, the term golem goes all the way back to antiquity and even the Bible, where it was first used in Psalm. But it didn't mean the golem that you're imagining, maybe the clay monster that we now all think about that's kind of captivated our visual and literary imagination. In the Talmud and in ancient sources, rabbis dealt with artificial creation, but it didn't really become a monster or a creature like that. And usually it was also put out of its existence very quickly. Later on in kind of medieval Kabbalistic texts, we have people experimenting with artificial creation more for the sake of a mystical experience than actually, you know, using a clay servant. And that's where we see the form, the matter, kind of coming into being with clay as the major kind of way of making, shaping this golem, and all kinds of Kabbalistic formulations used for the process of animation, usually using Hebrew letters to animate the golem. My own book, though, doesn't deal so much with this mystical side of the golem that was, you know, thoroughly explored by Gershom Scholem and later Moshe Idel in their work, but more with the legendary golem, the golem that was described already starting in the 17th century in European treatises, oftentimes by Christian authors. And this is a golem that is uncontrollable. It, in the Polis stories, it grows and grows and grows until it topples over the creator, killing it in the process. This is also the golem that has the letters Aleph Mem Taf, meaning Emet or truth in Hebrew, inscribed on its forehead. And when the first letter Aleph is erased, we remain with death, Met, and then that's when the golem loses its life. So that's a very early version, actually, that was also surprisingly taken up by Jacob Grimm, the famous Grimm of the Grimm brothers, and written by him. And that really influenced German Romanticism. And the golem was taken up in that area of literature. But we also are very familiar with the Prague version, which is a little bit different, in which Rabbi Löw, the Maharal of Prague, the famous teacher, who was actually a great rationalist, but in the golem legends, he's a mystical creator. He forms a golem out of clay to serve him in his synagogue, just basically to be the beadle or the shamash in the synagogue. And he uses, God's explicit name, Hashem HaMeforash, as the animating device. And this golem has to rest on the Sabbath or else it will run amok. And that's what actually happens one time when the rabbi forgets to remove the animating name, then the golem goes crazy and it has to be deanimated. And the whole mythology of kind of returning to the synagogue, repeating psalms again, and storing the remains of the golem in the attic of the synagogue, that also inspired a lot of writers to think about what happened to those remains and how they might have come back to life in later generations to help the Jews, to protect the Jews. But in the Prague story, the golem is not a protector. He is just a servant of the rabbi in the early versions. It's only later in the early 20th century that we have a golem that protects the community from anti-Semitic attacks from blood libels. So that's just in a nutshell, and there's so much more to say. the short history.
Right, but this was a story that was told and retold and is still being told and retold in different ways. From your book, I could gather that it's not always easy to understand how the story traveled. And I am interested to know how it traveled to you, to your desk, and what attracted you to this creature, or how did this project start?
This is a great question, because sometimes people ask me, did you hear about the golem as a kid? And the answer is actually no. I know that there were songs about, there's even a famous Bialik Hebrew song about the golem, but I have to say it's not as prevalent in Israel, and at least when I was growing up, it wasn't something that in Israeli secular, and you also grew up there, you can
right, no, I definitely.
It's not as familiar as it is in the United States. And I actually reached a conclusion about that in my book that has to do with the fact that this is really a diasporic story about a weak community that needs protection and that didn't really mesh well with the Zionist ideal of independence, of self-assertion, of of Jewish militarism. You don't really, once you have the IDF, why would you need a golem? And during my PhD studies, I encountered two really important works that influenced me. And one was Paul Wegener's 1920 film, Der Golem, wie er in die Welt kam, The Golem, How He Came Into the World. And the other is Shai Agnon, the Hebrew prose writer, Nobel Prize winners, Athena to this day, a kind of, I call it an aborted novel, a short novel. That has as its main protagonist a war-injured soldier, a German soldier, non-Jewish, who's nicknamed Golem. He forgets he's brain-injured. He does not know his name, where he came from, and he's just called Golem throughout the narrative. And so that fascinated me when I suddenly put the two together, thinking Agnon wrote the text in the 50s, but he's writing about World War I, and Paul Wegener was a soldier in the war, a survivor of very traumatic battles. A post-traumatic, actually, now we would call it post-traumatic stress, suffering of post-traumatic stress disorder, but actually shell shock, film director and actor. And he goes back, comes back from war, decides to make a third Golem film. He already made two, but he needed to make another one right after the war. And we have, but he doesn't talk about the war explicitly in his film. It's there as a presence. Aesthetically and otherwise. And then we have Agnon explicitly making that connection and trying to kind of wonder why the golem was so popular during World War I. And so that's what really brought me to this topic, the popularity of this story in Germany during the war.
And even though it's not really part of Israeli popular culture, as you just pointed out, you do show in your book that the golem as a metaphor, as a figure, comes up in Israeli culture, or should we say in Zionist culture, it's really in the beginning of the state of Israel. Could you tell us a little bit about that and how you even found out that it came up? Because this is not necessarily in a literary work. But rather in the culture in general.
I should say that my training is in comparative literature, and I started off with, looking at the golem as a figure in whatever cinematic or drama or dramatic or literary texts. But as I delved into the material more and started reading also the introductions to work, reading letters, and reading the printed press of the time period, I really understood that this is a golem metaphor or metaphorics, that the golem was an idea, not just a figure that actually, it can be molded and told in different ways, but also a metaphor that people played with to express ideas about soldiers, wars, enemies, weapons. I give all kinds of examples in the book, crazy like, the weapons used during World War II are often compared to golems because of their automatic, for that period, and destructive nature. Armies are compared to golems. And in the Israeli context, I was really surprised to discover that around 1948, before and after, and during the war, actually, the Arab League, that conglomeration of seven nation Arab nations, was described as a golem, was described as an artificial creation of the British and the European nation. It was seen as some kind of fake, but also monstrous because of its size and supposed strength. So in addition to kind of having a Goliath David analogy between the IDF and the Arab League of Nations, we also had a golem comparison. And even during the swearing in of the Israeli army, which took place in Tel Aviv in the Habima Square, Moshe Sharet, then the foreign minister, evoked the golem and talked about this false and bogus inflated image of the Arab League and how, you know, the Israeli army can defeat it. So I thought that was really surprising. And it also links again to what I talked about earlier about how the golem is projected onto the enemy and no longer is identified with the Jewish self and its need for protection, but rather it's projected onto the enemy. And really the things that are highlighted are how it's made of different parts and really bound to collapse, that it will not, or even rebel against its creator, the British. That is just an interesting development, I think, in
right.
the Israeli
and,
cultural sphere.
Definitely. And it's very interesting in general how you connect in your book the golem and warfare, because you do point out that there are golems that are less related to the issue of war, but the tension of warfare is also a tension that the golem captures between protection and destruction and defending and killing. And reading the book, I was interested to know whether this was your initial intention to connect the two, or something that came up once you started delving into the materials.
Yes, actually, from the day one, as I described, when I saw the connection made by Agnon, he was kind of he led me into it. I really see him as a cultural critic in addition to an amazing author. And he's a very good cultural critic of Germany, actually. And I really, when I read that book, you know, it's been really read as an allegory about World War II, but I really understood it as talking literally about the devastation of World War I and trying to kind of think about why, and this is a question that is actually not so obvious, that, you know, how to answer and how to approach it. Why, during a period of immense destruction and death and all this wounding that's happening, are people fascinated with artificial creation, with creating a new kind of human, and with the issues of, like, what does it mean actually to be human? It opens up all these questions of what is humanity in an era of intense warfare and changes to how we perceive technology and society and the relationship between them. That was actually the impetus for the whole book from the very start. But I have to confess that throughout the process, which took 10 years approximately, I actually thought at some point of, you know, putting the war thing aside and opening it up to be, you know, to talk more about kind of the beginning of cinema and how it uses, you know, the idea of animation, how cinema animates and all these kinds of other things that are more general. And then I came back to it because the materials convinced me, you know, all the things that came up in both the Yiddish and the Hebrew and the German press and on all the materials kind of surrounding these really fascinating literary texts convinced me to come back to it and kind of say, well, this is not the only trend, but a major trend in the 20th century reinterpretation of or readaptation of the golem story.
And a very timely one, because you're asking what is humanity, as you said, if it can destroy itself, if it can create artificial, well, not intelligence in the case of the golem, but that becomes part of your book in the final chapters. And Maybe you can elaborate a little bit on that, but then I would like to go back to what you just told me and really surprised me that there was a point in which you thought you would you should abandon the connection between war and the golem. So could you tell us a little bit about artificial intelligence and humanity and technology through the prism of the golem?
One of the starting points that I could begin with is the golem condition, which is a term that I use in the introduction and throughout the book, which is really my take on the human condition. The human condition is the title of a scholarly, very important philosophical scholarly work by the philosopher Hannah Arendt, who immigrated to the United States from Germany and wrote the book in English, but then translated it herself into German. And, you know, I think in that book, she's really dealing with two things that are bothering her. And it's not actually the atomic energy. It's space travel and artificial intelligence. And she believes that those two things have the power to change what she calls the human condition. The human condition is kind of something that's, you know, the very fact that we are conditioned, first of all, that we are born on this earth, that we die on this earth, and we cannot escape those bookends. You know, within the human condition, then there are other capacities for work and labor and to mold the world that we have around us, to communicate with each other, to create, you know, publics. But the fact that, you know, for her, both travel outside of the planet Earth and artificial creation really threaten this given, this present that we have been given, we're supposed to protect it, which is our own life on Earth. And that without it, you know, there is a certain possibility of kind of the end to human life. And I thought that was a very evocative, you know, formulation and way of thinking about also technology and the desire to escape through technology, to escape our given humanity. And the golem, in a way, embodies that desire, but also shows its breakdown always, because it is made of clay of earth, first of all. So in a sense, even though it's gigantic and strong, it is a clay entity. It has that vulnerability of the earth that connects the human being to earth. So it always has that vulnerable side. And in every single golem adaptation that I worked on, the vulnerability and the kind of desire for humanity within the artificial creation is so present. And that's a big motif in the 20th century. And also, you know, authors have depicted the golem as a very deficient creature. I mean, it has its strength and its abilities, but it's also very limited in various ways, whether through muteness, whether through its own kind of anger and rebellion that ultimately leads to its destruction, and whether, you know, it's used as a metaphor, like in the Gnon, for the war-injured soldier. So I think, you know, the golem is this amazing way to think about the destructive tendencies inherent in our own technological progress, but also to think about how everything, you know, everything that is constructed, every new attempt to escape the human condition has its kind of vulnerable, destructive side built into it.
Even if it's very low tech.
It does.
I want to go
yes,
back.
Yes, it is low tech. Yeah, it's, you're right. That the golem is low tech, but of course in later science fiction, it's imagined as extremely high tech.
Right.
As a very, very advanced computer, for example, in Stanislaw Lem's work, or as a cyborg.
Which teaches us that even low-tech is relative. What seemed really high-tech at some point of history now seems less so.
Right.
But going back to the question of your writing and your connecting of war and the golem for this fascinating project, it is a book that is sometimes hard to read because some of the descriptions, whether you're paraphrasing a work that you're analyzing or portraying a historical period some of the descriptions are monstrous, because we're dealing with a monster. The book is titled Modern Wars and Their Monsters. And I do want to know whether there were parts that proved particularly difficult to write for you, and how it feels when wars are still very much part of our reality in the world.
So you mean you don't enjoy reading descriptions of mutilation? And
no, of course, one derives some pleasure. One derives some pleasure from it, which is...
My answer is that this is all very, very mediated. That precisely because it's the golem, we have a kind of distancing that happens always. Not in every text, but there is a very creative, also on the part of the authors, not only on the part of the golem makers they describe, but a really creative attempt to kind of bridge mythology and, you know, realism, maybe, when it comes to these texts. So this may explain also why it's a successful metaphor and oftentimes allegory, but I think like some other works that deal, you know, with war in a much more direct manner might be more difficult. Now, I'm not saying I understand that you had, there are moments in the text that deal with that. But for me, I guess the narrativization or the plotting that the golem allows, that the story allows, the repetition too, I think is something soothing in a way. We talk about kind of repeating, that it helps work through ideas. And I think that the authors latch on to something that is known, a golem story, and make it and change it up and make it different. And they repeat with difference that way. And it allows you to approach something that is unknown, that's more scary and frightening. But yeah, it's a horrible and horror figure. And some point when you work on it so much, you become desensitized to the horror of it.
Or as you just said, there's certainly a good deal of sublimation in involved in the works that you analyze themselves and in your own book. I think you're pointing out something very important about this project, and you really show how the golem enables us to work through these monstrous events. And your book is timely for another reason. We talked about war, we talked about technology. You have also written an article last November for the newspaper The Forward, and you showed in that article that people still use the golem as a metaphor, and in fact that the golem was used as a metaphor in very recently in reaction to leaders that brand themselves as saviors, and we see this nationalist surge around the world, and you responded to it, and I would love you to elaborate on that for our listeners.
Yeah. So surprisingly, my book launch was scheduled in Ann Arbor at the Literati bookstore. Was scheduled for the day after the elections. And I thought we would be celebrating a triumph of some kind over a different monster. And it wasn't the case. And the day of the book launch, I revised my ideas and talked about this Trump golem metaphor and really about how it, you know, has developed and gone out, like exceeded our own control and became something we didn't expect it to become. So that was a very hard day for everyone here in Ann Arbor specifically and for us. And then following the book launch, people in the audience really urged me to say something about it in public and write an op-ed. So that's how that came into being. And really in the op-ed, it's less my views actually on the situation, but more tracing how throughout the whole campaign in the Israeli and American press, there have been comparisons, and British and Canadian, there have been comparisons of Trump to a golem, and the focus was that really that he has done things beyond our expectations, but also grown in his power and his capacities beyond what was expected. And the question was, who made this golem? And one of the answers was the media created Trump, that the media has created the Trump phenomenon. And now it's, you know, the media doesn't love it anymore because Trump is anti-media, some of the media, or a lot of right. the mainstream media, the so-called fake news. So that was kind of an interesting play. But I was also fascinated that after the elections, the neo-Nazi Richard Spencer called the media a golem, basically suggesting, again, that for him it was more about the kind of soullessness and you know, troublemaking power of the media. But, you know, the ultimate message under that was very anti-Semitic, right? Mm-hmm. Even though he didn't use the word Jews. So what's interesting in here is that the golem becomes, you know, a metaphor that crosses boundaries, that's used by the media, about leaders, by leaders, about the media, kind of that all the time transgresses its boundaries. It cannot be contained. It cannot be used, you know, to describe one thing or another, because it's constantly, you know, evolving and exceeding what we expect it to become. The metaphor itself, you know, has this potential. Has
right.
this potential.
And this is why I saw that article in the foreword, which I highly recommend, as a continuation of your book.
Right. It's where I talk about metaphors as monsters.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think we should end here with the word monsters, of course. And I want to thank you for joining the New Books Network today.
Thank you
about...
so much for having me on the network. And it's a pleasure to talk about with you and to talk about the book.
It was a pleasure to talk about the book with you. It's Golem, Modern Wars and Their Monsters, published by New York University Press. We will include a link to the book and maybe to the article in the foreword as well. Thank you very much, Maya Barzilai, Assistant Professor of Hebrew Literature and Jewish Culture at the University of Michigan. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.